from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The brutal conflict over the summer between Israel and Hamas in Gaza and beyond has made for some tough conversations in Jewish communities around the world. Many have supported Israel's response. Many liberal Jews, disillusioned with the policies of Israel's now dominant political right wing, have struggled to reconcile their liberalism with their Zionism, with Israeli realities now. We'll hear this hour from a prominent Jewish thinker who believes you can no longer be both liberal and Zionist, another who still considers himself both, and a prominent Israeli columnist who says Israel has nothing to apologize for. This hour On Point, a week before the Jewish high holidays start, we look at liberal Zionism and Israeli realities now. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you, were you a liberal Zionist? Are you still? Can you be both? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In a moment, we'll hear from Peter Beinart, author of The Crisis of Zionism, and later in the hour from Caroline Glick, senior columnist at the Jerusalem Post and author of The Israeli Solution, a one-state plan for peace in the Middle East. But first, joining me now from London is Anthony Lerman, author of The Making and Unmaking of a Zionist, A Personal and Political Journey. He is former director of the Institute for Jewish Policy Research. His op-ed last month in the New York Times, in the heat of the Gaza conflict and tough Israeli response, was headlined, "The End of Liberal Zionism." Anthony Lerman, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
What is the Jewish tradition that you're defending in your version of liberalism, and I guess in your columns and writing lately?
Well, I would say that the Jewish tradition that I'm defending is the liberal one, which sees Jewishness and Judaism fundamentally about rights and social justice. And it seems to me that liberal Zionism today, although many liberals who would call themselves Zionists might feel that they are supporting rights and social justice, in effect, it's very difficult to hold on to the tenets of liberal Zionism and also hold on to the tenets of everyone having rights. Because liberal Zionism, I think, fundamentally means having a Jewish state where one group, Jews, are privileged above all others, and therefore it's impossible to give full equal rights to other minorities living in that state. But moreover, Israel now controls some 2 to 3 million Palestinians in the West Bank and also almost 2 million in Gaza. And under that control, those Palestinians simply do not have the same civil, human, economic and social rights which Israeli Jews have. And so therefore, I feel that holding on to both liberalism and Zionism today has become very, very difficult indeed to do.
You write, the conclusion the Times headline writer takes anyway is that it's over. It's impossible. You're pretty tough. You say that the romantic Zionist ideal, you wrote this was in August, of course, Tony, to which Jewish liberals, and I was one once, you say, subscribed for many decades, has been tarnished by the reality of modern Israel, the attacks on freedom of speech and human rights organizations in Israel, the land-grabbing, as you describe it, settler movement, a growing strain of anti-Arab and anti-immigrant racism, extremist politics, and a powerful, intolerant religious right. This mixture has pushed liberal Zionism to the brink. Is there a handhold somewhere in there for you, or have you now separated your Jewish liberalism or liberalism from your one-time support of Israel entirely?
Well, I would not have called myself, and I have not called myself, a liberal Zionist. I ceased to call myself a Zionist about 15 years ago. So it's not really a question for me in that sense. It's a question for those people who are liberal Zionists to say how they can still hang on to those two things at the moment. And The problem, it seems to me, is that they may regard themselves as Zionists. They may feel that they have a certain ideology that they call Zionist. But the only Zionism, and I write this in my article, the only Zionism which has any agency today, I believe, that has any consequence, is xenophobic, it's exclusionary, it's a Jewish ethno-nationalism, which is inspired by religious messianism, and it's an ongoing project which is it's an open-ended ongoing project of national self-realization to be achieved through increasing colonization and what I call purification of the tribe. So in the face of that as being the only Zionism which really has any consequence today, I don't think liberal Zionism has anywhere to go because it doesn't have any agency. It can't affect what's happening in Israel. The government is going in a very clear direction to hang on to the territories. It doesn't want to give them up. It doesn't want a separate Palestinian state that's independent and sovereign and contiguous. And it wants to be a Jewish state and a Jewish and democratic state. Liberal Zionists have felt that those two things could be combined. But I think now that doesn't look at all likely because what Jewishness means in terms of the state today is very much an intolerant, orthodox-based Judaism, which I think is very, very uncomfortable for most liberal Zionists.
May I push on that front? The path that many liberal Zionists found to sustaining that status was the two-state solution. Things might be imperfect on all sides, but there was the vision of a two-state solution where they'd be two states side by side, and with that, the Palestinians would have their own agency, and therefore liberal Zionists could feel comfortable with that. Why not that still, that path, that hope, Anthony Lerman?
Because I don't think that there is any hope anymore. One can still hope for a separate Palestinian state. One can still hope for a two-state solution. But I think that in practical terms, it's simply not going to happen. And it's not going to happen because no government, I think, in Israel that is in power or is likely to come to power really supports the idea anymore. Netanyahu made it clear that he won't accept anything like that. Key political figures in Israel on the right are talking now about a one state, but that presumably means a state that's dominated by one ethnic religious group. Everything that Israel is doing at the moment, the government is doing, is entrenching its control over the entire West Bank. And I don't see that with that land in the West Bank divided up as it is with settlements and settlement blocks and checkpoints and Jewish-only roads. I can't see that ever becoming a Palestinian state, which Palestinians would feel is their right to have because it would be hedged in by so many conditions and so many controls that it would not be the kind of state that they want and that they should be entitled to. So I think sadly, and I say sadly because I was one time very strong supporter of the two-state solution, but the reality is that there is now a de facto one state. It's controlled by Israel, the whole area, and we have to recognize that reality. And I think liberal Zionists are coming to recognize that reality. And the answer surely has to be, if you're a liberal, the answer has to be, what's the root of your liberalism? It should be that everybody should have equal rights, something which I think should appeal very much to Americans because of the civil rights struggle and American Jews and their role in it. And working to achieve those civil rights within the one-state reality without prejudging what any final constitutional arrangement would be. You may get to two states. You may have some kind of federal arrangement. But how can liberal Jews, how can liberal Zionists tolerate the idea of millions of people that they control, that Israel controls, not having the rights that they are entitled to?
Anthony Lerman, stand by in London, if you would. Liberal Zionist No longer possible, Tony Lerman says. Almost an oxymoron. Peter Beinart joins us right now from New York, professor of journalism, political science at the University of New York, author of The Crisis of Zionism. Peter Beinart, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
You have put yourself out as a liberal Zionist, and to this day, I think you do. Tony Lerman says, not possible anymore. We've just got a minute before a break, and I'm sorry for that, Peter, but begin to dive in here. Is Tony right? You just can't straddle that anymore?
I think Tony's right that there's a tension between liberalism and Zionism. There always has been. But there can be a tension between two competing goals that you both consider valid. There's also a tension, for instance, between environmental protection and economic development or civil liberties and national security. It doesn't mean that one is illegitimate. I think if you believe that there is still a role for a country that takes some special responsibility for the protection of Jewish life around the world, then that is a reason for being a Zionist of some sort. If you believe that Israel has created a remarkable Jewish culture in the land of Israel, that is also a Zionist success that one doesn't want to imperil, even as I share Anthony's deep, deep, deep concern about the oppression of Palestinians, especially in the West Bank and Gaza.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking at a time of turmoil in the Middle East and a week before Judaism's high holidays begin about the tradition of liberal Zionism now up against some hard realities in Israel and Israeli politics, asking if liberal-minded still has a place in that reality. Anthony Lerman is with us, former director of the Institute of Jewish Policy Research, researches the state of Jews in Europe, joins us from London today. He was former chief executive of the Rothschild Foundation, a big grant-making trust that supports Jewish life in Europe, author of The Making and Unmaking of a Zionist. Peter Beinart is with us, author of The Crisis of Zionism, contributor to The Atlantic, the National Journal, senior columnist for the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, and CNN political commentator. He was editor of The New Republic until 2006. Carolyn Glick will join us in a moment. You can join us as well. Has Israel moved to the right and so much that you can't move with it? Are you still with it? Is there no choice? Can you be liberal and support Israel's dominant politics and policies today? Does the tension divide your family, your community, at home, at the synagogue, at the holidays? John Stewart, on his show over the summer, speaking up about this, kind of making us a little bit of a break or a little bit of distance, light between John Stewart and Israeli policy is out there right now, but also talking about just how tough it can be to have a conversation about Israel these days.
Just merely mentioning Israel or questioning in any way the effectiveness or humanity of Israel's policies is not the same thing as being pro-Hamas.
So you're against murder children?
Free Gaza! Free Palestine!
Raise the question, and up comes the sound. Some young people around the U.S. have gathered at If Not Now, When vigils, asking for an end to Israeli occupation. If Not Now, When was a question first posed by Jewish thinker Hillel. Here from a Friday night Shabbat vigil, this was August 8th in Washington Square Park in New York, when the Gaza conflict was roaring. A group there said prayers for Israelis and Palestinians.
We've been saying Kaddish for the Palestinians and Israelis who have died in the violence, and also practicing civil disobedience to demand accountability from major Jewish institutions that claim to represent us.
We are horrified that what is happening in Gaza is happening in our name.
That is not the spirit all over. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, speaking at the International Conference on Counterterrorism, this was September 11th, grouped Hamas, ISIS, and other extremist Islamist groups together and provided an explanation for Israel's actions.
If they gain ground, if they were to succeed, they would return humanity to a primitive early medievalism. I say early medievalism because my late father was a great historian of the Middle Ages, and I'd be giving them too much compliment. Early medievalism, primitive early medievalism, where women are treated as chattel, as property, and gays are stoned and minorities persecuted if they're left alive at all. And these groups must be fought, they must be rolled back, and they must ultimately be defeated.
Just defeat them. But here, one more voice, Palestinian Authority negotiator Saab Erekat, posing a question to Netanyahu August 4th on CNN before one of those 72-hour ceasefires was set to begin.
What are you going to do the day after, Mr. Netanyahu? This is a question for him. Are you going to continue business as usual? Are you going to continue with your settlement activities and dictation? Isn't it time for you and for us to reach an end for this occupation, an end of conflict, and get to the two-state solution once and for all? Or do we need to go back and do what you did in Gaza every 3-4 years? It's up to him.
Palestinian Saab Erekat there. Tony Lerman in London. Peter Beinart says, look, there's a tension, but it can be and must be straddled. It must be dealt with. He's got a commitment to Israel that he's hanging on to despite his liberal outlook. What do you say to that, Tony?
Well, I sympathize with that. I mean, I do understand that we all have tensions in our lives between things we believe in. It's not always possible to reconcile them. But there are, I think, some fundamentals here which have to be recognized. And, you know, I come back to what I said before, and that is, what are you going to do about the people whose rights are at the moment curtailed? The Palestinian rights are curtailed in territories which Israel occupies. And it seems to me that you can't live really as a liberal with the tension that those people don't have those rights, and yet Jews, both within pre-67 Israel and also in the settlements which are in the West Bank, that they do have the rights. So, yes, we all have to live with some kind of tensions, but that seems to me to be a very fundamental one, which the time has come for people to realize simply cannot continue. There has to be a resolution of that. Otherwise, what is left of Jewish ethics? What is left of social justice? And I suppose that's what I feel I'd like to challenge Peter about, to understand how he can live with that particular tension at this time.
Peter?
I think the question is, how do you minimize the tension? I entirely agree with Anthony. The tension has been growing profoundly, primarily because of Israel's control after 1967 of territories where you have millions of Palestinians who lack citizenship in the state that controls their lives, live under military law, even while their Jewish neighbors live under civil law, lack the right to vote for the government that controls their lives. So part of being a liberal Zionist for me, part of trying to minimize the tension, is trying to think about whatever I can do, whatever I can urge my government and my fellow Jews and non-Jews to do to end Israel's immoral, undemocratic control over the West Bank and indeed over Gaza as well, because Israel, according to the United States government and the United Nations, occupies Gaza as well, even though it doesn't have settlers.
But implicit there in that, Peter, is a sense that there will be a two-state solution. Anthony and others say that no longer looks likely. If that hope or possibility does not appear to be out there, does that change the calculus for you?
In judging how unrealistic the two-state solution is, you have to compare it to how realistic or unrealistic the alternative is. You know, my friend Gershom Gorenberg, the Israeli journalist, says that saying that because the two-state solution is now impossible, we should go for the one-state solution is like saying that a man has drifted too far out to shore and can't swim back, so therefore he's going to fly, which is to say, yes, the two-state solution is harder than it was because of settlement growth primarily, but most settlers are still there for economic reasons, and those settlers who were there for militant religious reasons would lose a confrontation with the Israeli army, I very strongly believe. We know that Ehud Olmert and Mahmoud Abbas, not too many years ago, were quite close to an agreement within months, both of them have said. And a one-state solution, a binational solution, which imagined that Israelis and Palestinians would be loyal to one country, more loyal to that one country than to their own religious national group, so that you could have a joint Israeli-Palestinian army that would presumably move Jews off their land in response to Palestinian land claims and hold together under those conditions of stress, I think is even more unrealistic. Binationalism has a poor record, even in more placid places. I think the two-state solution is hard to get to and harder than it was, but I still think it's less unrealistic than the kind of binational state that would be the alternative.
Tony, is it viable to hang on to liberal Zionism if a two-state solution isn't out there?
I don't think so. And I think the problem with the scenario that Peter is painting there is that it's not a matter of two alternatives. I mean, so often in this
situation in the Middle East and in this conflict, we're always presented with two kind of extreme alternatives. So, well, if you don't have this, you have that. Mm. You know, if you don't support exactly what Israel did in Gaza, then you support Hamas. Well, that's not the case. So in the same way, it's not a matter at the moment of either a two-state solution or some beautiful dream of a one-state solution. I'm not advocating that. I did think at one time that that might be the right idea, but I think that theoretical notions of that need to be put to one side now. Peter's absolutely right. You couldn't simply go from, okay, we thought two states was great, now we're going to think one state is great and go straight for it. It wouldn't happen. But all of these theoretical discussions have been overtaken by the reality of this de facto repressive one state. And sad as it may sound sad to say we need to recognize that and we need to now try and work within that. But I think that offers a new opportunity, because I think it offers an opportunity for Palestinians and Jews, Israeli Jews, to come together to work for that end and to claim their rights for themselves, not to have them given from outside. So much of what has been proposed in terms of solutions to the Israel-Palestine conflict is America will do this, or the EU will do this, or Jews in America will persuade, etc., etc. I think that kind of diplomacy has come to an end. I'm not saying Jews shouldn't try and influence, but people need to have agency in their own lives, and they need to work together to try and achieve those rights. Then, after what would be a long struggle, then you can talk about what kind of constitutional arrangement that you might have. And you may then say, okay, now we can have two states because we worked together, we achieved rights, now we can have a constitutional arrangement that would enshrine those rights. So I think it's not a matter of, you know, there's no other alternative, we have to work for the two state. That's what all my liberal Zionist friends here say. And I say, no, you've got to recognize the reality of the one state and the de facto one state and work from that forwards.
We have seen so far from that this summer. Carolyn Glick joins us in just a moment. Peter, forgive me, I've got so many callers waiting here. I want to begin to bring them in. I'll come back to you. Nina in Charleston, South Carolina. Nina, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. I am a committed Jew. I've always been politically progressive and left-wing. I've also always been a Zionist. I'm a baby boomer, and at this point, it's so difficult for me to continue to call myself a Zionist based on Israel's actions in the last several years, but I'm incredibly conflicted. I'm my children, who are all college and grad school age, who all of whom went to Jewish day schools, all of whom now attack me when I say that I am a Zionist, because it's just difficult to reconcile liberalism and continued support of Israel, or at least the way the Israeli government.
Nina, how is that working out in your faith community, if you belong to one, your temple or synagogue?
Yeah, I do. I'm very involved in my synagogue in Charleston, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult. If I said out loud what I'm saying right now, a lot of people, and I actually did post something very innocuous on Facebook several weeks ago, an article from the Times about when the people in Gaza are told to leave because they're going to be bombed, they have nowhere to go. It was completely apolitical. But I was called an Israel basher by people that I'm friends with. So it's very, very difficult.
Nina, I appreciate your call so much. Let me get one more if I may. Daryl, thank you, Nina. Daryl in Montreal, Canada. Daryl, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I've been an anti-Zionist for 10 years. For 8 years, I have worn on my back because the media will not represent the anti-Zionist point of view here in Canada. Anti-Zionist Jews boycott Israel's anti-Semitism, as Arabs are Semites as well. And I've been had attacked only by Zionist Jews, several of whom said that my grandparents should have died in the Holocaust so I could never be born.
Are you Jewish, Daryl?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Political Zionism has given us Jews for whom the Holocaust was not big enough. I think it.
What do you mean by that? I don't understand that.
If people say that other Jews should have died, if these people say that other Jews should, more Jews should have died in the Holocaust, so that Jews like myself could not be born and hold our opinions, that is saying that the Holocaust was not big enough.
Are you finding a problem for Judaism itself in this situation, Daryl?
Well, that is absolutely describing a problem for Judaism. What kind of a Jew would wish a Holocaust at all? What kind of a Jew would wish a greater Holocaust? It's terrible. When I hear in Israel that people say Arabs to the ovens, this is an absolute desolation to my heart. I have loved my heritage, loved my culture. We have given so much to the world. To see what is happening now is like the end of everything.
Daryl, I appreciate your call. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let us turn to Jerusalem. Carolyn Glick joins us, a prominent voice on the Israeli right, senior columnist at the Jerusalem Post, also director of the Israeli Security Project at the David Horowitz Freedom Center in Los Angeles. She's author of The Israeli Solution, a one-state plan for peace in the Middle East. She's Israeli and American, grew up in Hyde Park in Chicago, moved to Israel after getting a BA in political science from Columbia back in 91. Carolyn Glick, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on the show.
You can hear some of our callers and our guests, Tony Lehrman and Peter Beinart, in different degrees, struggling to reconcile their liberalism with their Zionism today. What are your thoughts, Carolyn?
Well, I mean, first of all, my thought is that I'm just completely appalled by this entire discourse. And I'm actually not quite sure why I'm on the show, because it's just all I've been hearing are lies. And, you know, I don't understand what service you're performing for your audience when you're putting out as fact, I mean, everything from Lehrman's false demographic data about the number of Palestinians, claiming that there are 3 million Palestinians in the West Bank when there are half that number, or claiming that there are 2 million Palestinians in Gaza when there are half that number, to their assertion that Israel is somehow or another in tension, or Zionism, the Jewish National Liberation Movement, is somehow in tension with liberalism. I mean, these positions are completely false.
Carolyn, this is an active debate in this country. Forgive me. It's an active debate here, which is the reason that we're picking it up, and we hope you'll contribute to it.
Discourse on falsehoods, both about Israel and about the reality that it exists within.
I don't know if you heard me, Carolyn. I'm just saying that this is quite an active debate in this country in many quarters, and that's why we're raising it.
I'm glad to hear that, because it's a debate that's based upon lies. And, you know, when your public discourse becomes controlled by misrepresentations of reality, then any position that you're going to be taking is both antithetical to reason and antithetical to morality. And I think that really at base, the positions that I've been hearing today, whether from your callers or from the other guests, are immoral.
Let's pick up one thing very simple. Many liberal Zionists have supported a two-state solution. You oppose it. You say one state. Liberal Zionists have said you can't do that and have a Jewish ethics manifest there. It won't be democratic. What do you say, Carolyn?
I say, first of all, that's false. And second of all, you know, I'm a little bit tired of this. I was in the Israeli delegation to the peace talks with the Palestinians. I was a core member of Israel's negotiating team during my military service in the Israeli army from 1994 to 1996. I was a core member of Israel's negotiating team with the Palestinians. I participated in the negotiations for all the major agreements during that period regarding the empowerment of the PLO in the West Bank. And I can tell you first and foremost that there hasn't been an occupation of the Palestinians since 1996 and since 1994 in Gaza. Well over 98% of the Palestinians have been living under the rule of the PLO, should I say the jackboot of the PLO in the West Bank since 1996, and under the jackboot of Hamas since 2007, when they forcibly deposed the PLO.
Carolyn Glick, please stand by there in Jerusalem. We have to take a break right here. We'll come right back to you. Carolyn Glick, columnist with the Jerusalem Post. In London, Anthony Lehrman is with us, author of The Making and Unmaking of a Zionist. Peter Beinart joins us from New York, author of The Crisis of Zionism. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking at a time of turmoil in the Middle East, a week before Judaism's high holidays, about the tradition of liberal Zionism now up against some hard realities in the minds of many in Israel and Israeli politics, asking if liberal-minded still has a place in that reality. You can join us this hour. What do you see here? Is this still possible? Is this a straddle? Is there still a confluence here? Is there a contradiction? Is it an issue in your life, in your community? Is Carolyn Glick right that it's naive to raise these questions in the face of the facts as she sees them, in face of threats against Israel? What are the stakes here for Israel, for Jews, for Judaism. Carolyn Glick joins us from Jerusalem, the Jerusalem Post senior columnist there. Anthony Lerman is with us, author of The Making and Unmaking of Zionists, joins us from London. Peter Beinart, author of The Crisis of Zionism, joins us from New York. Here's a little tape of Jeremy Ben-Ami, president of J Street, American lobbying group, supports a two-state solution, a liberal Zionist, I'd say, in that role, hosting a Google Hangout on July 14th.
We grieve not only for the people of Israel, we grieve for the families in Gaza who are losing children and whose lives are made simply impossible, not only by the current round of conflict, but by the conflict as a whole.
But here's another perspective. Major Roy Levy of the Golani Brigade and the Israeli Defense Forces in a video posted by the American lobbying group AIPAC.
When I look back in the history of other militaries, other countries, the easiest thing to do and what they have done is to wipe the enemy out. That's it. But we are different. We are totally different. From one hand, it seems insane. But from the other hand, I'm very proud to be in an army that have this level of morality.
A voice of the Israeli Defense Force there. Question, can you be a liberal Zionist today? Tony Lerman says no. Peter Beinart says still working on it, trying, difficult, but trying. Carolyn Glick says, in a way, wrong question. Haja's calling from Boston. Haja, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for having the show. Mm-hmm. I'm not Israeli or Palestinian, but I've grown up and lived here, and I understand Jewish people to be people who advocate for social justice. On the other hand, I watch the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and I see a slow genocide, pure and simple. That there is no right that Palestinian people have that's sacred. There's no boundaries. There's no normalcy, and no one can talk about it from the perspective that, from a social justice perspective. No one can treat it like these people, just like both Israelis and Palestinians, need to recognize each other's as humans first and approach the situation understanding that there are equal rights.
Haja, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. It's a big phrase, slow genocide. Carolyn Glick, what's your response to our caller, Haja?
She really ought to open a dictionary, and she really should be ashamed of herself. I'm terribly sorry, but, you know, this whole you can't be liberal and be a Zionist thing, it's narcissistic, and to be perfectly frank, it's anti-Semitic. I mean, you know, 16% of the Gazans in Operation Protective Edge that were killed were under the age of 18. Most of them were 15 through 17, and given Hamas's history of recruiting and using child soldiers, the vast majority of them were likely as well militants. Now, add to that the fact that when Britain went into Iraq, 36% of the casualties that died, the Iraqis that died at the hands of the British forces, were children. And yet nobody's running around saying Britain is a genocidal fascist state run by a bunch of messianic religious fanatics. Nobody is making these kinds of claims against the United States for actions that it took that caused vastly larger numbers of civilian casualties in Afghanistan and Iraq. Israel is held to a standard that no other country on earth is held to.
Let me put it to Tony Lerman in London, if I may. Tony, what do you say? It's anti-Semitic to bring this complaint of a conflict here, Tony.
Please, let me finish.
I will come back to you. Let me get that point. It's a pretty big one.
Well, it's a big one, but I'm afraid it's one that one must dismiss. I mean, this is what your earlier caller referred to, Daryl, I think, from Canada, that, you know, there are people around, like Carolyn's, unfortunately, who are ready to level these kinds of accusations. And I think that it just shows the difficulty of for liberal Zionists, because even people, the others who call themselves Zionists, like Carolyn Glick, on the right, supporting everything that the Israeli government does, they won't even recognize the legitimacy of liberal Zionism of the kind that Peter holds and the kind that many people in the United Kingdom hold. They simply will turn around to people like Peter and others and call them anti-Semites or self-hating Jews. And to be in this kind of situation where you can't get past that kind of accusation, because once you say somebody is an anti-Semite, that is the end of the conversation. You're it's a kind of magic wand that's being waved. That's it, you know, because it's the ultimate evil as far as Jews are concerned. Indeed, it is an evil, but it's absurd to level it at people who genuinely are wanting what is good for Jews, for Israelis, for Palestinians, and are trying to find new and better ways of achieving that through the kind of social justice that your caller was referring to.
Peter Beinart, leave aside anti-Semitic for a moment. Carolyn says narcissistic. She said naive, childlike, this view that maybe you propound. How do you respond?
Well, look, I'll try to avoid insults and just make this very basic point about why there's a tension between liberalism and Zionism, both two things that I cherish, but they're in tension. Israel's Declaration of Independence calls for a state that will offer complete equality of social and political rights, irrespective of race, religion, or sex. But even inside the Green Line, Israel has a preferential immigration policy for Jews. Israel has Jewish symbols on its flag, talks about the Jewish soul in its national anthem. Palestinian Arab political parties have never been part of Israel's governing coalitions, and no Palestinian mother or father in Israel can realistically tell their son or daughter that they can grow up to be prime minister. This is a very, very genuine tension, and we haven't even started talking about the West Bank or Gaza. I have ideas about how Israel needs to evolve in order to be a state that offers Jewish representation and self-protection, that minimizes and diminishes this level of tension. Antony thinks it's impossible, but for Caroline to say there's no tension at all just seems to me to make no sense.
Carolyn, why not have this conversation out? Why not hash it out, thrash it out? Carolyn? Carolyn Glick in Jerusalem? Carolyn seems no longer to be there. Julie in Boston. Julie, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you very much. I lived in Israel for 3 years. I worked at the very liberal Haaretz newspaper. Mm-hmm. I came there at a time where there was more hope for a peaceful solution. But I've become one of those disillusioned liberal Zionists, but for very different reasons than Tony and some of your callers. Basically, when I was there, some of my friends worked for Seeds for Peace, camp that brought Israelis, Jewish Israelis and Palestinian kids together.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I left, that it was almost defunct because there were no people willing to go because it was so dangerous. And the reason that I found and what...
No Israelis willing to go, Julie, or no Palestinians, or both?
Well, both. I mean, really, because it was getting so dangerous. This is at the time I was there.
But what do you mean dangerous? It's kind of an idyllic camp up in Maine, isn't it? It doesn't sound like a dangerous place.
No. I'm sorry. The one that was in Israel. Like, they came to Israel to work with the... I'm sorry about to be unclear. I'm talking about the one in Israel.
Okay.
But the reason that I have been disillusioned as a liberal Zionist is because who do you talk to? There is nobody to talk to. You hear about Jewish and non-Jewish people critical, giving great suggestions about the Israeli government, being self-critical. I met so many people critical of the Israeli government who were Israelis when I lived there. I was amazed. And it's great to have the freedom to criticize one's own government.
Yep.
Where are your partners in the Palestinian territories?
Peter, let me take that point to you. You hear Julie, she went, she worked at Haaretz, she was a liberal Zionist, and she found no party to talk to on the other side. What about that, Peter?
I think there are partners. I mean, there are protests that take place in Palestinian villages like Bilin and Nabi Saleh against land that's been taken from those villages, where they invite Israeli Jews and other Jews to participate in those protests. I've talked to Palestinians from those villages who talk very emotionally about the Jews that they've become close friends with because they share a common belief that this is unjust. There are also Palestinian political partners. I mean, Mahmoud Abbas has made, I think, quite remarkable concessions publicly in what he's willing to accept. He recently said, remember, Mahmoud Abbas is himself a refugee from the city of Sfat in northern Israel. He said publicly that he did not expect to return to Sfat. That was a bold and, quite frankly, politically perilous move for him to make. The Palestinians have accepted the idea that Israel can, according to reporting we have, that Israel can control most of the Jewish neighborhoods of East Jerusalem, that there can be an international force in the Jordan Valley. There were reports that the Palestinians limited even their claim of refugee return demand to 150,000 during the negotiations between Abbas and Olmert. So I actually frankly think that Israel has the most moderate, open to compromise Palestinian leadership in the West Bank today than it has ever had and that it will ever have.
Shalom in Newton, Massachusetts. Shalom, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Yes. Before I ask my short question, I would like to quote one of the most famous Jews in history, Joshua, better known as Jesus from Nazareth, saying, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." I am not a Christian, so I forgive them only if they have become aware of what they are doing. And what they are doing, and they, I mean, the Jews who put themselves as judges of Israel, they're ignoring the fact that Israel is in mortal danger from Iran. They already said one nuke will destroy Israel, and they ignored it completely. They want to ignore the fact that the leaders, both religious and political, of the Arabs in Israel, they didn't call them Palestinians yet, Haj Amin al-Hussein, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, was a Hitler collaborator. And what some of the Jews criticizing Israel are doing is supplying the same ammunition which the Nazis and their sympathizers did, namely dehumanizing Jews before they murdered them.
Shalom, I appreciate your call. I have Carolyn Glick back, and I want to go to her if I may. Carolyn, you hear Shalom calling. He says that this line of criticism is... It kind of gets back to your point of anti-Semitism, but surely in Jewish tradition there's a great tradition of debate and debate over ethics. Do you not welcome that here, Carolyn?
I don't see this as a debate over ethics. I think it is a false debate. It is a lie. This entire conversation is a lie. This entire notion that there can be any allegation whatsoever that Israel is committing genocide is an anti-Semitic allegation. The notion that Israel is denying the Palestinians rights that somehow they would get under the PLO or Hamas if Israel weren't there, is also a lie. The notion that the Palestinian plight, such as it is entirely Israel's fault, which is what Mr. Lehrman and Mr. Beinart would have us all believe, is a lie.
I don't think they've quite said that.
No, excuse me.
I've never said that.
I'm terribly sorry that, you know, you keep interrupting me and don't let me finish a sentence. I'm the only person here who is defending Israel. Everybody else is saying that Israel is some sort of illegitimate country that you really have to stick your liberal credentials at the door in order to support. This is so untrue that, you know, it's manifestly, obviously untrue. Israel is the only country that defends liberal values and that protects human rights. And if and Mr. Abbas, that Peter Beinart is running around saying is a moderate, he said about that, you know, yeah, I don't think I'll be returning to Sfat. And then while his remarks were being broadcast in the Palestinian Authority, he was denying that he ever made them. He was being interviewed on Israel Channel 2 television station saying them, and at the same time he was saying them on Israeli television, the Palestinian broadcasting system that he completely controlled was saying that he never said them.
Carolyn, I've got it. We have more callers for you, as we've had for Peter and for Anthony. Amy in Madison, Wisconsin, you're on with Carolyn Glick, Tony Lehrman, Peter Beinart.
Thank you. I am Jewish. I'm a liberal Jew. And over the years, I have done a lot of studying and reading of the situation and have come to believe that what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians is immoral and it is against Judaism. Yeah. Their occupation of the Palestinian people is without a doubt a reality. And Carolyn Glick, as are many Israelis, is spouting propaganda. There's nobody better at propaganda.
Carolyn says she's bringing facts and that she's hearing lies here, Amy.
Well, this is what people say when they can't debate in a rational way. There are Israeli soldiers that have refused to serve in the occupied territories because they know what goes on there. Israel engages in collective punishment. They punish all of the Palestinians for what a few do. They treat Palestinians as if they're not human. and they treat them in an inhumane way. I think American Jews hold the key here. We, those of us who believe that Palestinians have rights, need to pressure our government. People are afraid to act on behalf of the Palestinians because people who support Israel blindly will label anyone against that as anti-Semites, as you said.
Amy, our time is short before the break. Carolyn Glick, what about American Jews listening to this in the days before the high holidays? How do you see their role in this conversation?
I think that their role is to protect the Jewish people. And the Jewish people, to be protected, have to realize that we have civil rights, we have national rights, we have the right to life. And what all of these people who are running around saying Israel is committing genocide and making these obscene allegations against Israel, obscenely dishonest allegations about Israel, are saying is that Israel, unique among the nations of the world, has no right to defend itself when it is surrounded by enemies that want to annihilate it. So what they're saying is that Jews have no right to life. When they go to the synagogue on Rosh Hashanah and they sit with their members of their community, they have to realize that the most important thing about being Jewish is about being Jewish, is about retaining Jewish existence, not mourning only those who we've lost at the hands of anti-Semites, but also in recognizing that we have a right, that we are a moral, just, and wonderful people.
Carolyn Glick at the Jerusalem Post, thank you for joining us. Tony Lehrman, a right to exist, a right to life, a right to defense? 10 seconds, Tony.
Yes, well, a right to life, but not a right to be accused of being liars. And I think what Peter has discovered, that American young Jews are being turned off Zionism in Israel, I think it's exactly that kind of discourse coming from Caroline Glick.
That does it. Tony Lehrman in London, Peter Beinart, author of The Crisis of Zionism. There we are. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.